When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop up to 45% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee during the Blinds.com year-end blowout. Up to 45% off now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yes, indeed. Welcome into our Friday edition of Sports Talk. It is December 6th. It is not an edition of Fans in the Pro today because Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister, they're traveling to New Jersey today ahead of the Sunday matchup for the New York Giants. The Saints getting an early start this week. They usually leave the day before, but I think Coach Riz wants to get up to the New Jersey area a little more. So me, Charlie Long, and Cullen Steele will be hanging out with you until 6 o'clock. Then we'll get into kickoff with Boomer and Valente. And, of course, 7 o'clock, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup Playoff Edition. Plenty of fun action going on there. Charlie, what a night of sports. We had a lot of fun stuff going on between Thursday Night Football being a great game, the LSU women's basketball team with a comeback victory, taking it in overtime, and then also, hallelujah, the streak, ding-dong, is dead for the Pelicans.
I think we have kind of an order of operations here. Let's go in order that you mentioned.
All right.
We all won in pick six, Steve.
Woo-hoo!
It's a push. And for those out there that don't know, if it's a push in our pick six, I give us all a win. So, you know, the Lions and the Packers, they played a great game as everyone expected. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And Dan Campbell, when it came down to it. And, you know, I kind of tuned in the second half once the Pels game was over. I think it's, you know, I kind of started around midway through the third quarter. But still, there was a ton of action. Josh Jacobs was awesome. Three touchdowns last night. But then at the very end, where Dan Campbell's got like a fourth and inches call, he can kick the field goal to take the lead with like 40 seconds left. He goes for it.
Yeah, I ain't giving him any time.
I love Dan Campbell. He's awesome.
Everybody has been praising him. Obviously, you saw, I'm sure, his locker room post-game with the players. Just the guy, that energy is so infectious, and you can tell his entire team loves him, and they seem to obviously love each other, too. Hell of a run this Detroit squad has had, and what a turnaround he's had in Detroit for this franchise. They're going to start building a statue for him already out there.
Yeah, especially if he makes it, too, and wins the Super Bowl.
Hope to see him here, yeah.
The Detroit Lions, yeah, come down to New Orleans, Dan Campbell.
Miss you.
Yeah, have a beer. You know, so Dan Campbell, now the Lions are 12-1. So, you know, that was the big kind of swing game, I think, in the NFC North. Like, every Minnesota Viking fan, every Philadelphia Eagle fan was rooting on the Lions to lose that game, but they went at home by 3 points on a game-winning field goal. For those that didn't see it, Dan Campbell with, like, 40 seconds left at the opening, it was like the 25-yard line. He goes for a fourth and inches. They convert it. They run out the clock and kick the game-winning field goal, which is awesome to see. So now the Packers are still going to be a playoff team, obviously, in the NFC. They're a team to be feared, but it's kind of the hierarchy starting to separate, right?
Yeah.
Like, you see the Packers, you see the Eagles, and then there's a little bit of a drop-off where you see, you know, the group of the Packers and the Vikings, and then the division winners, potentially either the Seahawks or the Cardinals at this point out of the NFC West. And then the NFC South is just a disaster. but that, so like you saw,
it's like that meme with the three dragons and the ones like got the right. cross eyes and the tongue out.
The Godzilla villain, isn't that like King Ghidorah or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. So yeah, it's a little bit. You know, the NFC is starting to separate itself from the pack, the top teams, and it's Detroit and Philadelphia, and it just feels like they're kind of on a collision course for the NFC Championship game. But Detroit is trying to hold on to that, you know, home field advantage in the NFC. And right now with the 12-1 record, I'd say they're looking pretty good.
Yeah, they're mighty tough. And obviously that combo at running back is just so lethal and just keeps on, you know, pounding away, chip, chip, chip. I mean, just Steve, it's awesome.
You saw it like firsthand when you were a sideline reporter. Doesn't it remind you of like the Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara backfield
right.
in like the late 2010s? With David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, there's a lot of similarities there. I know they call themselves like Knuckles and Sonic or whatever.
Right.
And I think like, what was the Ingram and Kamara were like Thunder and Lightning or whatever. So it's pretty similar. But yeah, I mean, they're so fun to watch. Their offensive
Boom
line.
Boom and Zoom. That was Kamara.
Boom and Zoom. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. I was kind of close there. But yeah, it's a fun team to watch play. And you just feel really happy for Detroit that now, after all these years of futility, that they're finally a contender.
Looking at the action in Baton Rouge, we had the LSU women's basketball team taking on Stanford, and the Lady Tigers made that late push, tie the game up, send things to overtime, and then they end up coming away with a 94-88 victory over Stanford. Tigers now, what is it, 10-0 on the season for them? And pretty impressive run for Kim Mulkey and squad.
I want to go back to what Kim Mulkey said with us. I believe it was definitely last year. It was Michaela Williams' freshman year. And she said that Michaela Williams could be one of the best players to ever play in Baton Rouge for LSU women's basketball, to ever suit up. And that was on full display last night, Steve. 32 points, 12 of 18 shooting, 5 of 8 from three-point range, 9 rebounds. And as you mentioned, a come-from-behind victory, 94-88 over Stanford. So Michaela Williams, Kim Mulkey knew instantly that she could be special. And she had it on full display last night.
You mentioned Kim Mulkey, Michaela Williams. Well, after the game, they were asked about that PMAC faithful that ended up leaving the game a little early and missed out on some stuff. And here's what they had to say.
Michaela, you're obviously focused on what's going on the floor. Did you notice that a lot of people left the game?
I did, and I took names. I won't see them in church Sunday because I'll be gone, but I'll catch them next Sunday. I saw it. Sure did. We were down, I think, 7 with about a minute and something to go. Some of them turned back around.
Yeah. You know, once I saw them walking out, I was like, okay, maybe
they're fair weather fans. Let me be the bad guy. I saw who they were.
Kim Mulkey has got your number, folks, that you left early. I think that's hilarious. She is awesome. And obviously, this Lady Tigers team rolling right now and anxious for them to start SEC play eventually.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I'm actually not sure. Is the SEC in women's basketball as good as it is in men's this year?
Yeah, I'd have to check the standings, honestly.
I would need a look because I know in men's basketball, it's a ridiculous.
The gauntlet, just like football, right?
No, I think they played like the ACC-SEC challenge or whatever. The SEC absolutely stomped
Crushed
the ACC.
Them, right?
It wasn't close. It was like 10-2 in those 12 games. So yeah, the SEC is a gauntlet. It feels like in every sport, but you know, I would have to do a little bit of research to see how good it is for the Lady Tigers once they get to conference play.
Then in the Smoothie King Center last night, Woo! Even more joyous news. We are back in the win column, folks. And here's how it sounded on WWL Radio. John DeShazer and Todd Graffinini here on the call.
Booker between the legs. Herb's on him. And it's deflected. And
Herb.
The game
Herb.
Is over.
Herb. Put him in a string jacket and finished it off.
Booker never got a shot off. Herbert Keyshawn Jones does it again defensively. And the Pelicans have snapped the 9-game losing streak. It is kerflooey.
Love the joyous call from Graff and DeShazer there. The Pelicans winning 126-124. And man, oh man, I know I was holding my breath there at the end, and I'm sure you were too, seeing Booker getting that ball.
Yeah, CJ missing the free throw, and I texted you. I was just like, oh boy. But then Herb Jones. I mean.
Welcome back.
Yes. The stats about Herb Jones, and I'll pull them up here in just a second here, Steve. After the game, you heard Brandon Ingram say it when he was talking with Andrew Lopez on the television broadcast, that he's the heart and soul of the team.
Yeah.
Before he even came back, Trey Murphy said he's the heart and soul of the team. Last night, you saw it on full display. Herb Jones, first-team All-NBA defender, the heart and soul of the New Orleans Pelicans. He had been out since October 29th, and the Pelicans were in a complete rut without him. Now he's back. We'll see what they can do, because he's such a difference maker. And you look at the stat sheet, and he stuffs the stat sheet. 12 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals. That game-sealing block on Devin Booker, as John DeSager has put it perfectly, that he put him in a straitjacket. I'd love to hear that. Herb Jones is fantastic. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA, definitely my favorite player on the Pelicans.
And seems to be a dude, too, that everybody rallies around.
Yeah. No, everyone loves him. When he had his jersey retirement for high school,
right,
like basically the entire team showed up for him. They all love Herb. Herb is a great player for this team. He's underpaid as well. But, I mean, I just love everything that he brings to the floor on any given night, especially on defense, but also, you know, his offensive game, too. He had a little bit of rust that he had to kick off in the first half, but he made some big shots in the second half, too. And when the moment was at its biggest, Devin Booker, who's historically destroyed the Pelicans, they threw Herb Jones on him. He didn't even get a shot off.
Right.
Blocked.
We mentioned defense. A big guy on defense. We're going to be joining us right here after this break. Former LSU Tiger and NFL great Patrick Peterson, now an Odyssey NFL insider. He'll be joining us breaking down all things NFL. We're going to take a break here on WWL and be right back with more. You can shout out with us and hang out. Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870. Taking the break and be right back in 2 and 2. Shout out to Chuck Woolery. RIP, my man. Later. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I want to remind everybody, if you love high school football, stick around for the semifinal edition of the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. Ian Ozy and Alan Waddell and Coach Lou Valden coming at you at 7 o'clock. They're going to be featuring reports from all of the big games tonight. Catholic Baton Rouge at Edna Carr, Bunky at Dunham, Iowa at Franklinton.
Highway, sorry.
John Curtis at Alexandria and Madison Prep at Archbishop Shaw. And also the recap of Cecilia at Plaquemine. Plus, we'll give live interviews with the winning coaches. Don't miss the full coverage of the high school football semifinal on the most comprehensive high school football show in America, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. That's tonight, 7 to 10:30, right here on WWL and, of course, the free Odyssey app. Now, happy to be joined by Patrick Peterson, LSU royalty, NFL legend, joined by NFL Insider, host of the Odyssey Original Podcast, First and Pod Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Pat P., thank you so much for the time. We are honored for your presence. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, and go Tigers.
Amen to that. And you know what? looking at you know, your career, obviously, we've heard so much from the Saints locker room with talking to Tyrann Mathieu, how much of an influence that you and your dad were for him right now coming out of college, and just really amazing stuff there. Building that, you know, that brotherhood, I guess, throughout LSU and then carrying it into the NFL, those had to be some great times there.
Yeah, those were, like, you know, the best time of my life. Best times of my life, because you had the opportunity to, you know, give someone something, you know, that you felt that can better them. And also you had the opportunity to build a friendship for a lifetime. You know, me and Tyrann still talk, you know, to this day. You know, it sucks that we're not as close, you know, far in person as we used to, but we still have that open communication with one another, always checking in up on them. And it started back, you know, in 2009, you know what I mean? So it's just a blessing that we had an opportunity to cross paths and look where we are right now, you know, almost 13 years later.
Looking at the game last night, Thursday Night Football, the Detroit Lions keep on rolling. Big win over the Green Bay Packers. Man, oh man, as a player, do you have to love what head coach Dan Campbell brings to the locker room and to the field, that intensity and also that aggressiveness on the field? I know, obviously, it's easy to look at it now that it worked and say, oh, what a brilliant move. But I would think that most of the players are in that corner, too, of going for it in most cases instead of just taking the safer way out.
Well, you know, in that situation, you know, I didn't mind, you know, them going forward in that situation. And Dan, we all know Dan Campbell. It's no secret that he's an aggressive play caller. You know, he's going to call the game aggressive. He wants his team to be aggressive, and they also want to gain the confidence from his team. And it shows that he has the confidence in his guys. So with that, I didn't have a problem with that, because it was 4th and inches. They have one of the best offensive linemen group in the game. And if you can't get an inch, you know, with the game on the line, what are we doing? You know what I mean? So I didn't have a problem with that because they didn't want to give the Green Bay Packers an opportunity to go down and possibly take the game into overtime. So as Dan Campbell said in his press conference, he wanted his offense to end the game and be on the field so that they didn't give an opportunity for the Green Bay Packers to have an opportunity to go down there and try to tie the game. But in that situation, I didn't have a problem with it being 4th and inches with him going for it. But the one earlier in the game, before that one, on the minus 30, now that was a little questionable, especially with that play call that they end up calling, because if you go back and look at the game, Jared Goff converted 2 fourth-down red zone touchdown passes for touchdowns, and then in that situation, it was a long 1 yard, and they ended up running a toss play when the running game really wasn't clicking up until that point.
Pat,
so
you started.
I had a question about.
Sorry about that, Pat. You started out with saying, "Go Tigers." I want to take you to college football real quick. Obviously, it was a very busy week with early national signing day, and you know Mike Dettillier has said this a couple times, and I agree with him. So I'll get your point on this first. But with the new era of the transfer portal, Mike has basically come out and said that he thinks that early signing day isn't necessarily as important as it used to be, and that, you know, maybe someday the transfer portal opening day is going to be as big as early national signing day. So I want to get your thoughts on that first, and then I'll get your thoughts on some comments made by Brian Kelly in his presser afterwards.
Well, you know, the college, you know, landscape is totally different from what it was when I was in school. I can tell you one rule or one aspect of the NIL deals or how it's orchestrated or this, that, and the other, but I do love the opportunity for the kids to, you know, transfer. But here is what I don't like about the transfer portal is I feel like it's watering down the league and watering down kids' process. Like when I was in school, it was okay to transfer because you felt like you wasn't playing or you felt like it was a better opportunity somewhere. Now kids are just transferring because they don't like the coach or they don't like the position that they're in. And I feel like when kids come into the league today, they don't have that same grind, that same grit, or that same passion for the game because it's been given to them so easy and early to where they lost focus on the main goal. You know what I mean? So the transfer portal, it is what it is. Like I said, I can't really speak on it because I don't really know the landscape of it with me being removed from college for, you know, God knows how long. But I think they definitely need to change the way that guys are transferring to these other schools because I think it's almost like a cop-out and they don't have that same hunger and desire when they get to the NFL.
I'm going to jump back onto the NFL side of things, and I know you finished out your career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't think Mike Tomlin gets enough credit throughout the league for the type of coach he is and what he's been able to do for the franchise. Obviously, just all he does is win every single year. Just what was it like working under a guy like him, and what is he like, you know, to be up in front in person with?
Man, it's unbelievable. I know a lot of people are now starting to see, you know, who, you know, Coach Tomlin is, you know, behind the scenes, but I had an opportunity and the pleasure to see that, you know, up close in person last year. And it was a pleasure because, you know, you hear so much about, you know, how it is to be around Coach Tomlin, how his team meetings are, how he communicates with the players. And now having an opportunity to do that last year, it was like, man, this is what everybody said it was, you know what I mean? And I just felt like me and Coach was just cut from the same cloth, the way we thought about the game, the way we wanted, you know, others to be successful in their own right. And yeah, man, now the world is getting an opportunity to see that because, you know, when we see him on the press conference, you know, you hear all the sayings and you hear all of, you know, everything that's coming with, you know, his speech. But you don't get the day in and the day out, Coach Tomlin. And what people are seeing is what you see on the podium is what you get every single day. And that's what I appreciate the most about Coach Tomlin. He didn't sugarcoat anything. He kept it real all the time. And he was just a spade for a spade. And as an older player, I couldn't do nothing but respect that.
Insider Call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season.
Pat, the Saints and the Giants this upcoming weekend. Obviously, New York has been having a brutal year. They're 2-10. There's questions coming in about Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, the head coach and GM of the Giants, and their future in that organization. And just the way that things have gone this year, you know, I think Giants fans maybe didn't have the highest of expectations, but it feels kind of like rock bottom for that franchise right now. What are your kind of thoughts on the Giants ahead of the Saints matchup?
Man, that the Giants are definitely at rock bottom. You know, obviously, you know, not having, you know, sustainable quarterback play, losing seven in a row. This could possibly be 8 in a row. Defense don't have many turnovers, you know, can't sack the quarterback. So that, with all of that, it makes it very, very difficult for you to win. So I see the Saints winning this ball game in a close ball game. I love what the Saints have been doing ever since the firing of Dennis Allen. The team just seemed like they're playing with a little bit more juice and a little bit more fire. So that's good to see. And, I think the Saints should win this ball game due to the state that the Giants are in right now.
I'm just curious for you, it seems like the rash of injuries throughout the NFL right now, especially the soft tissue injuries with players, is just at a ridiculous high. And I'm not sure what contributes to it. There's a lot of, you know, theories about maybe the off-season training programs are not as intense anymore, so the players' bodies aren't, you know, ready for this grind. And I'm just curious your opinion if you think that's a valid excuse.
No, not really. You know, soft tissue injuries are gonna happen. You know, that's just something that's out of our control. You know, just like any other injury. You know, you want to do all you can to make sure that in your off-season training, to make sure none of those things happen due to the overload and the things that goes into, you know, NFL season. But at the end of the day, I feel like that's one of those things that's hard to kind of avoid because a soft tissue issue is something that's inevitable to try to avoid. So I don't think that has nothing to do with it.
Pat, definitely appreciate the time. Enjoy all your work, and obviously appreciate everything you do on the field and now off of it. Looking forward to hearing more from you.
Yeah, man, you guys take it easy.
Thanks, Pat.
That was Odyssey NFL insider Patrick Peterson, host of the Odyssey Original Podcast. First in Pod Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll hear what Darren Rizzi had to say as the Black and Gold get ready for their trip out to New Jersey to take on the New York Giants on Sunday. Coming right back after this here on WWL. Awesome stuff hearing from Patrick Peterson there. We're going to get into some more Saints talk right now. The final practice report for Week 14 came out. We know that Taysom Hill, Bub Means, and Nick Saldiveri, I can't even read my own writing, sorry guys, those three are out for this game against the New York Giants. Meanwhile, questionable is Tano Passanio and also Kendra Miller, who was a full go at practice all week. Hopefully he will be able to be activated for this game and in action, because surely they need some help in that backfield with Taysom down and a whole bunch of other weapons in that wide receiver group. Anyway, Coach Darren Rizzi addressed the media before they flew out for the East Coast, and here's what Riz had to say as they get ready for the Giants.
Did you do anything different throughout practice this week? I know you're typically looking at changing things as you kind of did it, but just with it being coming off of a loss, I mean, was there a different approach at all this week?
Listen, we're just trying to focus on the things that we haven't done well. Obviously, we were outside a couple times this week. Naturally, we kind of got rained out yesterday a little bit, but we were outside Wednesday, outside Friday. Try to make, you know, the focus, some of the things we haven't done well. You know, I mentioned to you guys third down. Yesterday was third down day. We put a really big emphasis on the third down stuff. I think that's going to be a big part of what we do moving forward, not just in this game, but all the games. You know, try to make the second half of practice. We haven't played particularly well in the second half, in my opinion, not only in this three-game stretch, but maybe overall in the season. So try to put an emphasis on the second half of practice and kind of finishing strong. And so just really the things that, you know, so other than just being outside and focusing on the things we got to improve on, that's really, really, so nothing, I wouldn't say there's anything major.
First week when you started with them as the interim, you talked about upping the tempo in practice. Is that maintained throughout?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're still getting, you know, like Derek mentioned that first week, just the more reps, the volume, the intensity's actually picked up. It's been really good. I thought we had a really good day today outside. I was happy when I left my house this morning again with the cold weather. It's the coldest day of the week, and we had a little cool weather today because obviously it's something we're not accustomed to. So I'm glad we were able to go out and be a little bit cooler out there today. So, yeah, all those things I thought, our tempo of practice. I haven't seen it. You know, I know a question has been asked about a drop-off, you know, coming off of a game that we didn't win. And I haven't seen anything like that. I just walked through the locker room on the way here. Our energy's good. Our intensity in practice has been good. And now we got to bring that to the field. So that's going to be the important thing. Bring that on Sunday.
Malik Nabers leads all rookies in catches. From what you've seen on film from him, what does that impress you?
Well, yeah, listen, I really liked the player in the draft process a lot. I really liked Malik Nabers a lot in the draft process. He was very, very highly thought of, at least by me. I think some other people in the building, too. And so it doesn't surprise me that he's, you know, had immediate success in the NFL. He's a very, very talented guy. He's obviously he can do a lot of different things. He can push the ball down the field to him. He's a catch and run guy. And so, you know, listen, he's one of the things I think I mentioned earlier in the week is he's one of their players that could create explosive plays. That's always, again, that's been a little bit of our Achilles heel, giving up too many explosives. And so when we're looking at it from a game plan standpoint and how we're going to try to win this game, that's going to be a big part of it is eliminating. I don't know if you're going to eliminate all of them, but we certainly have to try to minimize those. And that's what he does really well.
Second half struggles. I know, like, you hear about halftime adjustments being kind of overblown, but how much is, like, are you guys noticing the defense is reacting to what you guys did in the first half? Is there anything?
It's a two-part. I'm going to agree with you. I think the halftime adjustments are way overblown because by the time you get in there and go to the bathroom, it's time to come back out on the field. I think the thing that's not overblown, though, is that you're making adjustments all game long, both in all three phases, because, you know, there's going to be those unscouted looks. You know, we practice all week. We think we know what we're going to get. There's a lot of good coaches in this league in all three phases. And there's going to be some things that you're not prepared for, you know, week in and week out. And I really think that's a huge part of success in all three phases is how the players react and how well they're prepared for the uncarded, unscouted, whatever you want to call them, the looks that you weren't necessarily. And so you got to kind of follow your, you know, day one rules in a lot of those situations. So whether that's pass protection or run blocking or, you know, their run scheme or their pass protection or if it's a, you know, different combination of routes, how you handle that as the game goes on is a huge part, you know, of the wins and losses. And so I think it's not just a halftime adjustment. I think it's just in-game adjustments overall. We haven't done a great job coming out of the locker room. Just look at our first two drives on both sides of the ball the last 3 weeks. We haven't done well, and that's been an emphasis here coming out of halftime, you know, sustaining success all game long. We've had too many peaks and valleys, in my opinion, and that's been the emphasis.
That was Coach Darren Rizzi today addressing the media before they took off for New Jersey, and the Saints have just placed Taysom Hill on injured reserve. No surprise there. Obviously not practicing all week, was out for this game, and them now moving him to the IR list. Get well soon, Taysom Hill, obviously. But I think we're all anticipating a big win for this Saints squad Sunday in New York. We've heard from a bunch of people, including Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, calling this Giants team, this franchise, a clown show right now. They're in such disarray over there.
He's not wrong. I mean, this is a team that's looking to the 2025 draft. They're trying to see whichever quarterback they're going to take, if it's going to be Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders at the top of this upcoming draft. I mean, they're a rebuilding squad. They're 2-10. They're a disaster on both sides of the football. And real quick, to what Coach Rizzi was talking about with Malik Nabers,
yeah.
Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports, and I put this in the Sports Flash earlier, Steve, Malik suffered a hip flexor injury on Thursday, in Thursday's practice. He was a DMP today, so his status is apparently up in the air.
Right, he's listed as questionable for them.
Right, he's listed as questionable, but we'll see if he actually plays. But he apparently suffered a hip flexor injury in practice this week as well. So, you know, their best, you know, weapon player on offense, just in general, could potentially be out. So that's just another piece. I mean, they're already missing Dexter Lawrence, who's their best player on defense. So, yeah, the Giants are a mess.
We are taking a break. When we get back, more sports talk. Want you to hear from you on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. It's 504-260-1870. We'll be talking some Tulane football, too, as they get ready for the AAC Championship matchup tonight in chilly West Point, New York, taking on Army. So we'll be right back with more right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. The Black and Gold away this weekend. But do you want to win tickets to the next Saints home game when Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders are in town? That's December 15th. in the Caesar Superdome? Well, you can score two premium tickets to the game, plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. That's an open bar with premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet with celebrity chef Aaron May, and it's all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. You just got to go to WWL.com/contest and enter for your chance to win the tickets to the Saints battling the Washington Commanders from Dudley the Bossier, official injury lawyer of the Saints and Saints Radio WWL. Getting back into that big Pelicans win last night, for all those, you know, trashing this team, it's amazing how you look when you have some pro players back in the lineup. We talked a lot about Herb Jones, obviously, but man, oh man, B.I. was in fuego last night.
Yeah, he was in fuego in the third quarter, and then he made some really bad plays in the fourth quarter. And I'm not going to, you know, dog on B.I. because the 21 points that he had in the third quarter helped contribute to that 45-point third quarter that the Pels had,
yes, sir,
which really was the biggest key in the comeback. They were down 11 at half, and then the third quarter they just went on this huge run, and a majority of it was sparked by B.I. Now, I'm not going to let him off the hook for the turnovers that he had in the fourth quarter where he wasn't playing very well. But still, 29 points and returning from injury was huge, obviously. And we'll talk more about Herb Jones because he deserves all the love. And I do have that stat. I will read it after the top of the hour news.
We're taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we get back next hour, we'll be talking more NBA. Nick Friedel, Odyssey NBA insider, will join us. Been too long. Looking forward to hearing from him. So taking a break and be back with more sports talk right after this.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
WWL. Well, happy Friday, everybody. We are gearing up for prep football coming up 7 o'clock. Big playoff weekend going on. Going to be getting all those score updates from all our wonderful reporters out there with Ian Ozan, Alan Waddell, and of course, Coach Lou Valdin bringing you the action. That'll start 7 o'clock. Also starting 7 o'clock, the AAC Championship game, Tulane Green Wave playing at the Army Black Knights. Looking forward to this matchup. The Tulane Green Wave, a 5-point road favorite in this matchup, should be a good one. Unfortunately, we know that they won't be heading to the playoff. Was a hell of a season, though, under John Sumrall year one.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach Sumrall's the man. Like, Mike and I have talked to him every Tuesday during Tulane
Tuesdays. Definitely a guy you want to grab a beer with.
He's so cool, but he's also a fantastic coach. And I knew that coming in. Like, it was a home run hire, like, because of what he accomplished at Troy. I follow the Sun Belt because I'm a Cajun grad, so I follow UL's playing Marshall this upcoming weekend.
You got that tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. But, you know, his success at Troy, you knew he was a good head coach. And then he comes into Tulane, and he just rolls the AAC until the final slip-up at Memphis, or against Memphis at Yulman Stadium on Thanksgiving night. Had they won that game in Coach Summerall's first year, they would have been hosting the AAC championship game. Instead, they're heading up to West Point and facing Army, who went 8-0 in the AAC this year. Army's a good team, though, Steve. Like, they're 5-point favorites on the road, and I think a lot of that is because Vegas knows what Tulane did to Navy at Navy
right
in Annapolis when they won 35-0. But I think Army's a little bit better than Navy this year. I know that they were both in the top 25 at one point, but they're a little bit different as well. And Coach Summerall, when we were talking with them this past week, he kind of gave a breakdown of, you know, both the Army offense and also their defense. You know, I brought it up with him, Steve, when we were talking. There was this one drive I remember seeing from Army. I think they were playing like North Texas or something. Might have to go double check that. But Army went on a 23-ish play, 90-something yard drive that took like 13 minutes off the clock.
Just grinded it
out. How do you defend that? And if you're a defense, you realize how demoralizing that, and not even just the defense, the team, how demoralizing that is to a team. Like, Army can do that to you if you're not, you know, playing your top game. Now, Tulane's defense has been excellent. I feel like the game against Memphis was a little bit of a mirage because you've seen it so consistent over the last month outside of that Memphis game. And Coach Summerall, when we were previewing that Memphis matchup, he talked about the type of athletes that Memphis features. It's a bunch of transfers from, you know, the SEC and the power conferences that made it to Memphis, and they're excellent players. And Tulane kind of struggled against the athletes of Memphis, but that's not the type of offense that you'll see from Army. So I think Tulane's better suited for this matchup than they were last week against, you know, Memphis on Thanksgiving night in Yeoman Stadium.
You mentioned that you and Mike Dettillier speaking with head coach John Summerall this week. Here's what you and Mike had to say with Summerall earlier this week.
Coach, you talk about a 180. You played Memphis Thursday, now you play Army. Offensively, it looks a little different, what Army does and what Memphis does best. And you have a little bit more time to prepare for Army, and you kind of know what you're going to get. But you don't see teams that use that scheme that often. Now, Navy has somewhat similar characteristics. I think they threw the football a little bit more this year because of Ryan Horvath. I think that's why they threw it more, to be honest with you. But it's a unique offense to go up against when you go up against Army.
Very unique. You know, they're back. We coached against them last year at Troy. We played them in 22 and in 23. They're running more of the stuff they ran in 22, which is more of the under center three back option stuff. They ran some shotgun here and there in 22, and they're running some now, but they're really running more under center conventional triple. And last year they didn't run as much of it, but the quarterback is a different type player. You talked about the Horvath kid at Navy. He's a little bit, you know, thinner, more of a maybe receiver body type, if you will. That threw the ball well. This kid at Army, man, he's a freaking, he's a tough physical dude. He's built like a linebacker. I mean, he's 220 pounds, probably 215 pounds, yoked up, rocked up looking dude, throws it good. But man, he is a battering ram of a runner. It's almost like having Mekhi Hughes back there running the ball that he throws it pretty good too, you know, and so, a tremendous challenge with what they do schematically, but also who's doing it. They're really a good football team.
Coach, Army, 10-1 record, and we talked about their offense, but their defense. I want to get your thoughts on that. Obviously, when you're an Army team that can control the ball a lot, I remember I saw, like, there was one drive they had in a game where it was like 23 plays, 97 yards, yeah. 13 minutes off the clock. It's just, what do you even do at that point? That's so demoralizing to an opposing defense. So they obviously control the clock, and that's how they play, but their defense all season long, outside of that Notre Dame game where they gave up 49 to Notre Dame, who's obviously in the playoff conversation right now, allowing 11.7 points per game this season. They have just as many games given up less than 10 points as they do given double-digit points. So I want to get your thoughts on the Army defense as well and what you see from them.
Man, they're stingy. They do a great job. Nate Woody's their defensive coordinator. Him and our defensive coordinator, Greg Gasparato, worked together. Gas was the co-DC at Army for Woody back in 2020. And so, man, they play really sound, fundamental football. The kids play hard, man. Got a lot of respect for how they play. And the way they play offense is complimentary to helping your defense a little bit, too. But it's a good football team, man. The way they play, they're really, really good.
Fundamentally sound defense, Steve. I mean, once again, the 11.7 points per game that I mentioned outside of that game against Notre Dame, that matched with a ball control offense, it's tough. Like, you got to be able to stop them. And I think early down success is going to be super important in this game, being able to slow down Army and kind of forcing them into those third and sevens, third and eights, you know, even like a third and six, right, where it's not as favorable for a team that runs a more traditional style triple option offense like Coach Summerall was mentioning. So, Yeah, it's going to be a fun matchup. Tulane 5-point favorites in West Point, but we also had someone on the text line, Steve, texting in saying it's forecast to be 26 degrees at kickoff for the AAC championship.
Yeah, you think it's cold here.
Yeah, no, it is kind of cold here, but definitely not cold as it is in West Point, that's for sure.
What's you bring it up, obviously, with the time of possession, Army ranked first, and Tulane's tied for fourth in the nation. Pretty impressive.
They both run the ball.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Mekhi Hughes has been great this year. Once again, just like I said, that their defensive performance against Memphis kind of felt like a mirage. Mekhi Hughes' performance felt like an outlier in that game against Memphis. He's been so good and so consistent all season long. He's been a bell cow back, as Coach Summerall has called him multiple times. He's going to have a nice bounce back performance. And the same thing with Tulane. Their offense wants to be a run heavy, kind of take explosive plays in the passing attack with Darian Mensah. That's what you want to see from them tonight. And I think if they can run effectively, you know, not necessarily allow Army to go on those ridiculous drives. Kellen, I think you got in my ear and told me it was a 21-play drive. It was 21 plays.
Yep.
Like 94 yards, was it?
So 94 yards, 21 plays, 13 minutes and 54. So 13 is not 14 minutes.
Yeah, basically an entire quarter off the clock in one drive. So, you know, Army's defense kind of thrives off of what their offense can do. So it's really up to Tulane's defense to be able to get them into those third and long situations where they aren't as comfortable, and then for Tulane's offense to get the run game going and set up the explosive passing game that they like so much.
I'm definitely interested to see some of the AAC offensive player in the year in Bryson Daly. Really haven't caught many Army games, but this kid's obviously a beast, especially running the football.
It's like he said, man, he's built like a linebacker. So it's going to be tough to tackle him, but you got to be able to wrap up.
Going to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. You can chime in too, 504-260-1870. We got James in Metairie on the line. What you got for us today, James? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, brother. Listen, I would take Jersey all day than Goma Powell. I mean, I don't even understand why how that even happened. So I mean, so with that, the real problem lies in not just who's going to be the coach, but think about our last few drafts. Our best players have been free agent pickups. Taysom Hill, and I would, you guys may disagree with me, but I think Shaheed is more of a money player, especially for what we gave up to get him, which is nothing. Then the soft guy, I shouldn't say that because he's got head injuries and stuff, but, you know, the wide receiver, I would take Shaheed over the wide receiver that's injured. They're both injured, but you know what I'm talking about, the Ohio State guy. Yeah, so as long as Loomis is, and I understand, you know, you guys are going to tell me that he can't get moved out of his spot or whatever, but maybe they'll offer him a cush position somewhere else and get some real draft guys, because our drafts suck. I mean, luckily we're in a subdivision. I mean, the rest will be worse than it is right now.
The Saints definitely have to do something about getting that influx of young talent in, that's for sure. There's been a lot of these drafts early on. Your draft picks really haven't panned out. Hopefully, a guy like this year, and Taliese Fuaga has shown a lot of bright spots. And even Trevor Penning, I'm not saying he's this all-pro or even a pro bowler right now, but he's definitely made steps in the right direction. But I understand where he's coming from here with way too many misses early on.
So I have to text Mike and confirm this number. I think he said he's got like 20, anywhere from 20 to 22 first-round grades for this upcoming draft. And where the Saints currently are right now, like, you know, 4-8, they're playing the Giants, so it should be 5-8 because the Giants are a complete mess. If you look at their schedule, it's not out of the question for them to finish, you know, around 7-10, maybe even upwards of 8-9 if they can pull off an upset against either Green Bay or Washington. Otherwise, if they drop, you know, one of these games to Tampa or Vegas and it kind of falls apart a little bit here down the stretch, you could be picking in the top 10. And so we'll see what they can do with this upcoming draft. But that's what I think Mike had said, was it's about 20 to 22, I think, first-round grades that he has in this upcoming draft. It's not the best first round. It's not the most explosive first round. Obviously, it's not a quarterback-heavy first round. You're going to have, like, the top two guys, and maybe that's it in the first round, Steve, as far as, you know, obviously Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, but who else are you spending a first round quarterback or pick on a quarterback?
You know how things go, though. They end up, you know, someone will end up jumping up boards.
Yeah, probably so. But as far as, you know, other positions, it's pretty decent on the lines. It's it's an interesting draft to look ahead to. But yeah, I agree, James. You got to start hitting on some picks and refreshing this roster with some young talent.
We're going to take a break right now. When we get back, we'll talk to Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell. Get in touch with him about everything's going on with the Pelicans and the Wild Wild Western Conference, and touch a little bit on the East. We'll take a break right here on WWL. Be right back with more after this. We're back here on Sports Talk, getting ready for some prep football playoff action coming up 7 o'clock. We're going to be talking about more NBA action right now. For what, we welcome in Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell. Nick, it's been a while. How you been doing, man?
Guys, it is great to be back with you. I'm doing fine, and there is a whole lot of stuff to jump into, and I know it starts for y'all in New Orleans.
Oh, man. Nick, it's been rough, man. It has been brutal. Like, it's been way too long, by the way, buddy. It's good to hear your voice, and I can't wait to break it all down with you. The Pelicans' start of the season's just been as bad as anyone could possibly imagine. But it was kind of a glimmer of hope last night, so maybe it's a good luck sign that we're getting you back on the show with that victory against the Phoenix Suns. I mean, you got to start with the injuries to this team in the first month and a half of the season. They were just decimated. And, you know, like, I think there's a picture that goes around on social media from time to time that Laker fans love to use, where it's just a bunch of bums in the starting lineup, and it's just like, oh, I was a Laker fan when this happened. Pelican fans kind of have their own version of that now. It was like a starting lineup with Brandon Boston and Elfrid Payton and, like, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, Eve Missy. Like, none of their top seven players were playing because they were all out with injury. So if you want to know how they dug a 4-18 hole that's now 5-18 after the win last night, I mean, you just really got to look at who's on the floor.
Completely, and I think I can speak for all Pelicans fans that if you just get Herb Jones back and he can close out the games like he did last night, then everything will be fine. but the reality is, when you watch that team, you have to understand that they're just absolutely decimated, and it's bad luck to a point, and the depth isn't there. But when you have the injuries that they have dealt with, over and over, it just starts to run everybody down. And guys, it's interesting to me because I was actually just down for that Warriors game a couple weeks ago. I went to the practice facility in Metairie, and I'm just watching all the guys who are injured go through the rehab and all the coaches trying to get everybody up and keep the spirits as high as they could possibly be, given this team has struggled so desperately. And when you are losing that much and you are seeing guys that just aren't out there, it wears on everybody. I mean, I think that's one of my biggest takeaways in covering the league for so long. It's that I think a lot of fans forget that these guys are human beings like everybody else. And when you have the injury hits that have taken place over and over again, there's only so much that any coach or anyone else can do. They just don't have the talent to match up. And the only hope is, you get everybody healthy going into a couple months from now, and then you see where things land after that.
Nick, I got a couple of numbers I'm going to throw at you, and I've been kind of previewing this for a while now on the show. The Pelicans with Herb Jones of the season, 3-2, without Herb Jones, 2-16. And then if you go back to the last 2 years, this was on the television broadcast, after the win last night, the Pelicans with Herb Jones in the last two seasons, 49-32, without 5-19. And when I give you those numbers, it feels, and Antonio Daniels made this comment on the broadcast, that feels like someone that's averaging 30 points per game. Like, that feels like an all-NBA level talent that you're missing. He's an all-NBA first team defender, but this is a guy, and you've heard Trey Murphy say it, you've heard Brandon Ingram say it, the heart and the soul of this Pelicans team is Herb Jones, and they are just not the same without him. He had been out since October 29th. He made his return last night. He is a difference maker despite not being a 30 point per game scorer or anything like that.
I couldn't agree anymore, buddy, and what you see when Herb is on the floor and you talk to people in the organization and who are around him day after day after day. While he is never going to get the hype of a Zion or an Ingram or be that type of player, what happens when he's out there on the floor is everybody looks over and they're like, oh, Herb's there. There's almost a sense of relief because they know he can do so many different things, especially the defense, and play at the level that he does. So there's no other way to describe him other than the way that so many have recently. And And when you watch the league, you know what you see. And what Herb is, on top of being a great defender, is he is the glue of that group. And if you take away the glue of any group and you start to wonder why they're struggling, well, I mean, he's exactly the type of person that you want to be out there. And you just hope, for the Pelicans' sake, that he can stay out there now that he's back.
When you look at this team, too, obviously a big missing piece is Zion Williamson. We got the latest injury update from him dealing with a hamstring issue that they're going to be reevaluated in another two weeks. And you can imagine fans here are just about fed up with the Zion saga. I thought really things were turning around last year. He was had his healthiest season, seemed to be really dedicated to taking care of his body, becoming more of that professional athlete. But things are just not turning out right for him again this season. And I don't know what to make of Zion anymore with this team. What are your thoughts and feeling about his future with this franchise?
It's really sad, frankly, because we all lived it. We all saw the hype, and we saw what he could be, not only coming out into the draft from Duke, but in those games. I mean, guys, I remember being in Brooklyn a couple years ago. I think it was opening night, and Zion was throwing down dunks, and you're looking around and you're going, okay, here it is. But again, I go back to what I just saw, which was, you know, 2 weeks ago at this point. When Zion walked out onto the practice floor, that was the first time I think he had spoken to the media since his latest injury. He just looks big. He looks big, like a guy who got hurt and was like, all right, I'm going to chow down, and I don't feel good, and I'm feeling sorry for myself. And when you see that, given the injuries that have already occurred and what has already piled up, it's sad. It's sad for the Pelicans. It's sad for the league because there was so much hope that Zion was going to be one of those next faces for the NBA, and I just don't believe at this point it's going to happen. And you could say, okay, maybe a change of scenery. Fine, but I think you nailed it. When you have a guy who has as much talent as Zion has, but repeatedly hasn't been able to keep his weight in check and keep his body performing at that same high level that everybody expected when he came into the league, I don't know how it's going to change around now. Because if you keep having those same issues over and over and over again, good luck.
And then, you know, the lack of communication really is the thing that I think is most frustrating to people down here, especially the fan base, is that, you know, he gets caught up with a hamstring injury again, which it feels like every single year. It's like a chronic issue with him. He deals with hamstring issues all the time, and it's because of his size and the power that he plays with. But at the same time, like, nobody knows when he's going to be back, Nick. Nobody knows when he's going to be back in playing shape, when he's going to be back on the floor. Like, that whole thing, Steve, you mentioned, like, the 2 weeks.
Reevaluated in 2 weeks.
It's almost become a joke for a lot of Pelicans fans. It's like a cursed, like, statement.
Right.
Oh, he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. 2 weeks turns into 2 months, and then you're at the All-Star break, and we still don't know what's happening with him. It's just, it's as you mentioned, it's sad to see, but that's definitely been the biggest issue is the communication, that nobody knows when he's going to be back on the floor.
Charlie, I think the biggest problem is that nobody trusts that he's able to get back onto the floor and be that type of player without all that weight that we have seen in the past. That is the issue. And the frustration, I was only down there a couple days, but it is palpable because we all know how much talent he has. But that is just the worst thing that can happen in the NBA for any team, but especially in a market like New Orleans that is so desperate to cheer on a star and a player who is supposed to deliver them to a different place and standing within the framework of the league. When you can't trust that your star player is going to be out there night to night, and now we are years into this, and it's the same old story. Of course, people are just going to roll their eyes and take a sigh each time that this occurs. So the answer is there is no answer. And the answer to the Pelicans' problems is until you move away from Zion, you are going to live in the same cycle that nobody wants to see.
Nick, moving from one star to the other, Brandon Ingram, who played in his first game in basically a week and a half, he popped up with a calf injury, and then it turned out to be like plantar fasciitis. It's just what's really going on here. No one really knows.
More about communication.
Yeah, once again. And Brandon Ingram's missed time in the past as well. It's not just been Zion. B.I.'s also been out for extended periods of time with kind of minor injuries. But Brandon, you know, both of them actually dropped their agencies, and I'll get your thoughts on that as well. But Brandon signing with Clutch, which for a lot of fans down here, people remember what happened with Anthony Davis and Rich Paul. It carries a negative connotation to it. So he signs with Clutch. You know, his name has kind of popped up as a potential trade candidate because they weren't able to come to an extension this past offseason. I remember, Nick, we talked ad nauseum about, you know, what do you even pay Brandon Ingram? And if you do, what kind of asking price should the Pelicans reach? But what do you kind of think of the future for Brandon Ingram with this roster, and if you think that they trade him before the deadline this year?
If I were David Griffin, I'd be on the phone right now, Charlie, and I would say we're out on this whole thing. But that's so much easier said than done always in the league, because we can sit here and go, all right, move him, yeah, be done. But if you're not getting the value in return that you feel like you should be, you know, you're setting your team up for failure either way. The second you said Clutch and Pelicans fans
Nick,
started going, oh boy.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The only thought that I had in my mind was, that's all, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
I was there that day when he was asked about the shirt and why did he wear that. I mean, you can feel the writing is on the wall. But the problem, again, and this ties into everything we're saying, the problem for the Pelicans is the reality, especially after all these injuries, is you should just hit the button. And it's just, again, it's sad for a team that is so desperate to make all these stars work together, and it seems like they have the pieces, but for a variety of reasons, it's not happening. But I, as far as Ingram goes specifically, I absolutely would move him prior to the deadline. But, and that is always the caveat, when you are trying to make a deal in the league and you don't feel like you're getting enough back, I'm not sure where you turn. And the reality is, if you are a front office person or a coach, it's probably going to be somebody else's problem sooner than later.
Well, the Pelicans have stood out for the wrong reason in the Western Conference. Curious, Nick, your opinion on who you think are the bright spots in this division. Obviously, the OKC Thunder, a stock team, and what do you know, the Pelicans got to play them next. But what else has really impressed you this season from the West?
It's got to be the Thunder, and it feels like the Thunder are set up, and people will point to Sam Presti, of course, for making the moves. The move that jumped out to me and lots of people around the league was for Caruso. I mean, if you have that kind of defender on top of young pieces that they already have, you are really in a good space. Can they be the team that people want them to be? And can Shai Gilgeous-Alexander find the help he's going to need over and over again in the playoffs when he's getting doubled and teams are focusing their entire defense around him? We're going to see. We're going to see if those periphery guys can be that difference-making force that Oklahoma City's going to have. I mean, after that, I've watched Golden State a few times the last couple weeks. They're always going to scare you with Steph, but they've got their injury problems, and it seems like they've hit a little bit of a wall here in the last week or two. After that, I really think it is wide open. I mean, people will look at Dallas with Luka and Kyrie, and they'll say, all right, well, you can't count out Denver. They have Jokic, but Jamal Murray just doesn't seem like he's the same player that we were seeing a few years ago. I think it's up there for somebody to take, but as far as the early impressions, I feel like it's Oklahoma City and everybody else in that conference.
In the Eastern Conference, Nick, you know, I don't want to say that we were right about the 76ers, but man,
oh, we were right.
Man, we were right about the 76ers. They're an absolute disaster. If you look at Washington at 2-18, everyone expected them to be bad. But second worst in the Eastern Conference, the Philadelphia 76ers at 5-15. I think Joel Embiid's only played four games this season. But this is a two-parter because I want to get your thoughts on that so we can do kind of a victory lap there about their ridiculous offseason. But also, the Orlando Magic, who are number three in the Eastern Conference behind only Cleveland, who got off to an incredible start, and Boston, the reigning champion. Orlando lost Paolo Banchero 5 games into the season. And Franz Wagner, who I think is on the NBA's updated MVP ladder, I think is number 6. And a lot of people have kind of bat their eyes at that. But, man, Franz Wagner and the Orlando Magic, without their superstar talent in Paolo Banchero, has been awesome this year. 16-8 record. I think they went on a stretch where they won like 11 of 12 games. They've been just incredible when everyone kind of pinned them for dead in the water once that injury came out.
Charlie, I mean, I grew up in Orlando, and what I can tell you anecdotally is that my friends who haven't really paid attention since Shaq and Penny are kind of looking at each other going, okay, like
right.
This team might actually be something again. I know they had that little run with Dwight and Stan Van Gundy, but it feels like a younger group that is finding its way, and that's all you can hope for when you have Banchero and you have Wagner, and you hope that the stars are making the other guys around them better. Is it sustainable what they're doing? Again, it's all measured through the prism of the postseason. We're going to see. But when so many people kind of looked at that deal that the Magic gave Wagner over the summer, and they said, Franz Wagner for $50 million, whatever that number is, that's insane. There's no way he didn't hear that and get pissed off and go, all right, I'm going to show people that I am, in fact, a great player and I can carry the team when our star is down for a little bit. So as far as the Magic go, the future remains bright. As far as Philly goes, if you're Daryl Morey, guys, we're sitting here talking about the Pelicans and they're a mess and what should they do? What in the hell? If you're a Philadelphia 76er fan or you're in that front office, can you point to positively and go, yeah, it'll all be okay once everybody comes together? I didn't think that the Sixers were ever going to get there with Embiid because I didn't think he could stay on the floor long enough. And they signed Paul George. He's going through injuries of his own. I know people like Maxey, but I flatly don't think this is all going to work. And, Charlie, it's what we were saying for months, not only in the playoffs last season, but all along. This is a good team on paper, but being a good team on paper and being a great team in real life are two vastly different things.
Nick, definitely always appreciate your time and hearing from you. Next time you're down in these parts, give us a shout for sure. We'll buy you a po' boy.
I love it. I will for sure. And, guys, it is great hearing you both. And I look forward to talking to you later.
Thanks, Nick. Take it easy.
That's Nick Friedel, Odyssey NBA Insider. Always great stuff. Taking a break. We'll be back with more sports talk, so stay tuned right after this. Folks, you ready for the joy of the season? WWL is inviting you to kick off your holidays at the 3rd Annual Children's Hospital New Orleans Holiday Parade. It's going to roll through the French Quarter in downtown New Orleans tomorrow, starting 11 a.m. It's going to be fantastic. Larger route. Custom throws plus 30 design floats, high-flying helium balloons, including a 30-foot Santa, and your favorite holiday characters, plus dozens of New Orleans' beloved marching groups and bands, marching bands. Plus, you can catch throws from Newell, Scoot, and Ian Hoke. They'll be on float number 7. Bring the family to the Children's Hospital Holiday Parade. That's Saturday at 11 a.m., all in partnership with the Downtown Development District and Kern Studios. Celebrate the season with WWL. We'll be back with more sports talk after this break as we close things out here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, closing things out, getting ready for prep football starting at 7 o'clock. 6 o'clock will be kickoff with Boomer and Valente. Looking forward to this weekend, gentlemen. Obviously, we got conference championship games starting tonight. We actually have Tulane taking on Army in the AAC championship. That's a 7 o'clock kickoff. We'll be in tune, obviously, SEC championship game and more. What are you guys' plans heading into before Saints Sunday? You're going to just be glued to the TVs for all the college football action?
Exactly
and
that.
And Pellies, too.
No, for sure. Exactly yeah. That, Steve. So, First and foremost, high school football tonight. Got a ton of great matchups around the state. 32 teams will be cut down to 16 ahead of the finals next weekend. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Ian Ozan, Alan Waddell, Coach Lou Vowden, and the prep show tonight starting at 7 o'clock. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also, I'll be keeping up with Tulane and Army. That will be on the TV while I'm producing the show. And then tomorrow, it's conference championship weekend. We got all the picks that we have for pick six, so I'm going to be keeping an eye on all those. We all started 1-0.
Which was actually pick eight.
Yes, we had the two-point conversion because we did five conference championship games. But that starts tonight with Tulane Army. And then tomorrow, my Cajuns host the Marshall. What is it, the Herd? The Thundering Herd?
Thundering Herd.
Yeah, yeah. The Cajuns are going to whoop some ass, so I'm looking forward to that. And then also, you know, the Pelicans back in action tomorrow night, too.
How about you, Cullen? What you got it planned for?
The only thing I got planned is watching football tomorrow. And then Sunday morning, is that where I'm going to see you two guys back here, right?
All right,
yes.
Big old happy family again.
Yeah, we'll be right back here Sunday morning for First Take.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Appreciate it all. For Cullen Steele, Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be talking to you Sunday when we do 8 a.m. pregame coverage of Saints action. Coming up next, Boomer and Valente. After that, the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup Playoff Edition. Stay tuned for that right here on WWL. Good night.